Marcus Davenport taking Mayfield to the turf on third down.
6'6", 259 pounds. We've talked about, is this guy going to be a first-round pick in the end?
Jackson and Mike White's going to throw a touchdown to Traquan Smith from Central Florida, and there is our first score of the game.
Mike White looking sharp, Charles.
And sharp in so many ways at where he's putting the football.
Balazs, though, has a big hole and a first down, so the drive will stay alive as once again, Kalen Balazs lowers the shoulder, this time through the local guy, Jeremy Reed.
And now watch him drop the pad level, Charles. You just talked about him being more physical in his contact balance.
Green as Baker gets ripped down and taken down by Obo Okoronkwo from Oklahoma.
He's working against Kappa from Humboldt State, Division II. Pure speed from the outside. That's who Okoronkwo is. He's a pure speed guy. He's got some toughness.
DJ Chark down the sideline. DJ Chark does it again. Kyle Lauletta hit him on the long touchdown. This one, 75 yards. Tanner Lee is in. That ball is out. That is a scoop, and that is a score. Marcus Davenport.
Yeah, but that was all about Marquise Haynes. Yeah,
that was a big play by Haynes.
Haynes beat the right tackle from Army.
Gallup had 100 receptions this year from Colorado State. Tanner Lee behind Gallup. This one's picked by Jeremy Reeves in his home stadium. How about that one? Reeves gets a block. Reeves is going to bring it back to the 40.
Tanner Lee.
And Davenport on the backside created some pressure, I believe.
Lauletta, Aitman, he fired it in there for another touchdown for the South.
Three touchdown passes for Kyle Lauletta. So Mike White.
Cheers, Bears fans, and all of the draft picks tuning in to listen to this very special Bears on Tap, totally focused on this past weekend's Senior Bowl. I am Aldo Gandia, the editor-in-chief of BearsBarroom.com and the Bears Barroom Radio Network. This show is also dedicated to formally introducing you to two professional scouts who have agreed to work with the Barroom in providing you with over 200 draft reports on college players entering the draft. Those reports will begin appearing on BearsBarroom.com in mid-March. The first gentleman is Danny Shimon. He is the scouting assistant for InsideTheLeague.com, an NFL draft columnist for a National Football Post, and Chicago Bears draft analyst for BearsBarroom.com. Welcome, Danny, and tell our listeners why these draft reports will be different than any others we might find elsewhere.
Hello, Aldo, and thank you for that terrific intro. I just want to say I'm excited to partner up and team up with Phil, and we're going to be producing, like you said, over 200 and some scouting reports on all these college eligible draft eligible players. And what's going to be different in terms of what we're going to be offering is we're going to be scouting these players like you normally see, you know, the positives, negatives, and everything. But we're going to add a special feature where we're going to be giving you an insight, giving our readers an insight as how these players would fit with our Chicago Bears if they so happen to be drafted by them. So, you know, if it's a, you know, running back, defensive end, linebacker, so on and so forth, how do they specifically, their strengths, positives, you know, weakness, whatnot, how do they fit within the Bears system?
That's going to be a lot of fun and something that I've never seen anywhere else. So I'm really looking forward to seeing these reports. I know you guys have been busy looking at tape. And when I say you guys, I mean also Phil Rainey, who is our second scout. Phil is a freelance reporter for NFL and NCAA football games. He's had a varied coaching career, most recently training coaches on player safety techniques, including USA Football's heads-up tackling and heads-up blocking training system. Phil, welcome to the Barroom, and please tell our listeners a little bit about your scouting background.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Danny and Aldo, for bringing me in on board. Looking forward to working with you guys and also providing some unbiased and objective insight to all you Bears fans out there listening right now. I'm not as diehard as you guys as far as Chicago Bears go, but I'm diehard as far as football goes, so you're going to get my best, even though I'm not a a true Blue Bears fan. Maybe doing all this work for you guys, I'll become one. So you never know. I mean, I love football, so I mean that's part of the reason why I do it. And I know Chicago people love their Bears, so I'm willing to provide whatever insight I can from a different perspective other than a diehard Bears fan. I've been scouting independently for a few years, so I do some reports for agents and stuff that I know that ask me about players here and there. And then also, like I said, I contribute in other ways. But I'm always watching tape of football throughout the season, whether it's in the off season or during the season. So I love watching tape, especially since I used to coach for over 10 years, too.
It is going to be interesting to see your transformation from being a nonpartisan Chicago Bears watcher to being a diehard Chicago Bears fan by the end of 2018.
I'm a little afraid of that because you guys are a little bit on the crazy side. You're equal to the enthusiasm that I've seen from Philadelphia Eagles fans, too. In fact, my brother-in-law, he's a huge Philadelphia Eagles fan, and right now I think he's on cloud nine, and he'll probably be over the moon if the Eagles pull off the win against the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
the one exception is we don't boo Santa Claus here.
That's right. That is very, very true. I'll tell you one thing. This is one of those Super Bowls where I just can't root for any of the teams. I want to see a good football game, but if it ends up in a scoreless tie, I'd be happy because none of those teams really appeals to me from a fan standpoint. But you guys do.
It can't end up in a scoreless tie, although
yeah,
that's
I know.
Not gonna happen.
Maybe maybe it gets snowed out and snow crashes through the roof there in Minneapolis, and they call off the game. Something terrible should happen to all 80 players. I'm just kidding. All right.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Crazy Chicago Bears fan.
When I first met Phil, he told me he had listened to one of our podcasts. I think it was a Bears Hour live show. And he goes, holy cow, you guys are passionate.
Yeah, I was like, wow, this is what I'm getting myself into. But that's okay. Bring it on. I'm good.
All right.
I'm actually looking forward to it. I love people that love football. And I know they love football in Chicago, so it's all good.
We should probably explain his nickname, Phil's nickname that we've given him.
Oh, yeah, West Coast Phil. Thanks, Danny.
No problem.
Well, yeah, it's very simple. We've got Draft Dr. Phil on board here at the Bears Barroom Radio Network and on bearsbarroom.com. He does tape review on YouTube for us as well. And Phil has quite the loyal following. So Danny immediately thought, well, these guys are going to be, fans are going to get them confused if we refer to him as Phil and so forth. So Danny, right off the top of his head, came up with the nickname West Coast Phil for Phil Rainey and East Coast Phil for Philatotion, and it makes perfect sense.
And it took him to say it about three or four times before I actually said, you know what, I like that, so I'm going with that. I love that name, actually, so I'm West Coast Phil, yeah.
Where in the West Coast are you, Phil Rainey?
I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, so I'm actually, and some of you Chicago fans probably won't like this, I used to work for the 49ers, but I'm a huge Niner and Raider fan. And I used to work for the 49ers back in the days with Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, and Steve Young. So we gave you guys the business a few times in some of those years.
You did,
so,
indeed.
Oh, wow.
I just might have ended my career on beardbarroom.com. So. Yeah.
Talking smack on his first podcast. Come on.
Well, I tell you, I was always a fan of the Bill Walsh coaching system, the West Coast offense. I mean, I actually have a book somewhere, a 400-page book on his coaching philosophies and styles and stuff. And I never got through it because I wasn't as passionate about coaching as I thought maybe I was going to be. But I was passionate about that coaching system and Bill Walsh. So I'm glad that you're going to be on board here to kind of share that knowledge with us and provide insight into all of the college football players we'll be talking about. Before we get into a position-by-position analysis of what happened at the Senior Bowl this past Saturday, I'd like to get both of your impressions on the game overall. Danny, why don't you start and tell me what you think about this lopsided win by the South that was, I thought, entertaining to watch, but maybe you as a scout didn't find it as entertaining. What were your thoughts?
No, you just stole my thunder. That's exactly how I was going to describe it. You know, it was an entertaining game despite the lopsided score. We did see a number of players compete and display their individual skills. The rain towards the end kind of put a damper on the action, as I'm sure both coaches just wanted to get the game over with and make sure no one was injured. But I thought it was overall was a very entertaining game to watch. We saw, like I said, a lot of skill position players do their thing. We saw some good offense and defensive line play, some good quarterback play. So as a scout, you know, sitting there watching it, even though the scouts, we prefer the practices, the one-on-one matchups, more so during the week. But this game was something what we were able to capture, certain receiver going to go certain DB, the lineman versus the defensive lineman, so on and so forth. So, like I said, it was a pretty entertaining game, in my opinion.
Phil, what were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I agree. My first impression was the score itself. I mean, it scored 61 points total in the game, and you know that's the first largest amount of points scored in the Senior Bowl since 2002, when they scored 67, when the South won that one, also 41-26. So, very impressive. A lot of scoring, a lot of big plays. So that's what everybody likes to see, the big plays, and they gave the fans their money's worth. I'm just glad I wasn't sitting in the stands, because I didn't want to be out there in the rain to witness it. I was plopped on my couch with my feet up and checking the action out on the tube where I was nice and dry. So, it was a pretty good game.
I would have snuck you up to the press box. You could have been sharing Reese's Pieces with me and and a nice warm press box. But maybe next year we'll do that. All right.
Yeah. I actually would probably will stay for the game next year.
Excellent. All right, now let's go a position-by-position breakdown of the players from the Senior Bowl, and we'll attack this the same way these two scouts are going to attack player evaluation on the website. They've agreed to divide up positions. So Danny is going to be covering all the quarterbacks coming out, and clearly the Bears are not in need of a top-ranked quarterback in this draft, but they will be in need of mid-round players, maybe late-round developmental quarterback, and so Danny will be looking at that from that perspective, and also just giving general overall thoughts about some of the guys that the Bears will probably bypass, just so that we can get kind of an idea on his thoughts on their abilities. So Danny, why don't you begin first by talking about the Senior Bowl quarterbacks.
The practice leading up to the week and to the game were all centered on the two big-name North quarterbacks, you know, Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. However, you know, during the game, actually, Western Kentucky's Mike White and Richmond's Kyle LaLetta, you know, stole the show. You know, combined, those two threw for over 300 yards and four touchdowns. So, but, you know, like, again, the main attraction was Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. And I thought during the week and in the game, Allen, I thought, showed what the big, you know, the big hoopla is about him. I mean, it's his size, athleticism, and tremendous arm strength. But he also showed the negatives. He showed the inconsistency in terms of his accuracy and an inability to continuously hit the underneath throws. So whether, you know, he would hit a ball, a receiver in stride, and the next two, he would overshoot him or you know, hop the ball down to him. So we saw the good and the bad of the both quarterbacks in this the game, and as well as the week of practice. Mayfield, you know, he did what he always does, right? He's got good enough arm strength to play in the NFL, but you know what he doesn't have is that size, the height. So a lot of times when he got pressured, he had pressure up in his face, collapsed in the pocket. He had trouble seeing over the defensive line, so he tends to do what he normally does, just roll out to the sides, chuck the ball, you know, check it down, or throw it out of bounds. So the one thing about Mayfield that I did notice, and you know, besides his understanding of the passing game, accuracy on intermediate routes, which we've already seen on tape, is, you know, he's got that, I want to say, it factor in terms of leadership quality, because you know, he got there late due to a family emergency, and as soon as he hit the practice field, he took control of that North team. You just saw players gravitate towards him. You saw players wanting to, you know, make a play for him, and even during the game, it was pulled out after the first series of the game. He was constantly encouraging his teammates. You know, even when Josh Allen, there was one time he scrambled out to the sidelines, and there's Mayfield, you know, barking encouragement, patting him on the behind. So he's got that leadership factor. So I see where these guys, his teammates, rally around him and want to play for him. So that was impressive. And you don't see that on tape, obviously. You see that when you see these kids in their own elements practicing and being able to socialize with each other on the field. So that was something that caught my eye in terms of Baker Mayfield. If we move on to the other quarterbacks on the roster, you know, like Mike White from Western Kentucky, obviously he started the game and he had a solid showing. With him, it's basically, you know, he's got that size, a 6'4". At 6'4", 225 pounds, he's got average arm strength, not the most powerful arm, but he does throw a nice ball, catchable football, tight spiral, displays solid accuracy and touch on his passes, does set up nicely in the pocket, quick feet, has a solid pocket presence as well, can feel pressure coming from his blind side. So he was someone that caught my eye during the practices as well, and then obviously in the game.
Danny, a quick question for you. Josh Allen or Mitchell Trubisky?
Well, I mean, you know.
Come on, Danny, spit it out.
In terms of size, athleticism, arm strength, you got to go with Josh Allen. I mean, I don't think anybody matches him this draft class. So, but in terms of that's a tough question. Wow, caught me off guard there.
Do you really think the Bears are going to draft another quarterback this year?
No, not at all.
Just a hypothetical.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I would have to go with Trubisky mainly because of his accuracy and his ability to throw to a spot. He shows that he has the understanding of a passing game, how to throw a receiver open. Allen is getting there. Allen shows it in bits and pieces, but it's not consistent. So Trubisky, and I'm comparing him to his college days, one season, albeit 13 starts, but he did show that on tape last year. And so I would have to go with Trubisky in terms of that. But if you're talking about size, strength, and arm strength, athleticism, I got to go with Josh Allen. So I don't know if I answered your question. I think I kind of dodged a little bit there, but
Fair enough. I threw you a curveball there, but I appreciate the answer. Phil, what are your thoughts about the quarterbacks you saw? You watched them all three practices. You saw tape of them. They had a really fantastic setup down there in Mobile, Alabama, where they had computers with tapes from all of the practices. And Phil and Danny spent hours and hours looking at that tape. So, Phil, I just have a question. What from any of these quarterbacks stood out to you, whether it was a positive or negative, that you can share with the audience?
Well, what stood out for me was the fact that the bigger name quarterbacks who were mainly on the North squad didn't perform nearly as well as the South quarterbacks. And I think that kind of lit a fire under those South quarterbacks, because all you heard about all week was Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield and, you know, all the guys on the North squad. And, you know, I guess those guys on the South, they took offense to that because, you know, they had two quarterbacks that threw for over 100 yards. In fact, Loletto almost hit 200. So. But, he looked good in practice, too. So, I mean, he performed – he was consistent. He performed well in practices, and he performed, you know, phenomenally in the game, and which is why he ended up becoming the MVP of the Senior Bowl. Other than that, you know, they just – you know, some of those guys make money, and some of those guys kind of regress. So –
Well, and one of the cool things about these two gentlemen is that they both studied under Greg Gabriel, the former Chicago Bears player personnel director. Many of you folks who follow him on Twitter know that Greg is a very opinionated player personnel expert, knows his stuff. You might disagree with his opinion on stuff, but he knows football, and he's taught both of these gentlemen. And so they've got some similarities in what they've learned about the football game, the game of football, but they also interpret things differently. So throughout the podcast that we'll be doing today and into the future, you can bet that Danny and Phil are going to disagree on more than one thing, because I saw it firsthand.
That's kind of what you get a glimpse of how it really is in the scouting world, in the personnel departments. Not everybody is going to agree on a player, and you know the thing is to come together. And, you know, and disagreement is a good thing, because the whole goal is to get it right, right. Not to be right, but to get it right. So
exactly.
You can't do that unless you're hashing out what you see differently from the other person, because it's all subjective. And, you know, if everyone was a yes man, then there would be no real need for to have scouts on the team. You just let the one guy make all the decisions and go from there. But it doesn't happen right. That way. So, you know, we're going to provide what happens in real life. So.
Everyone likes ice cream, just no matter which flavor you like.
Exactly.
Well put. And then one of the things that I'm really looking forward to seeing from all of the scouting reports but in particular here when we're talking about the quarterbacks, are the scouting reports that Danny will produce on guys like Kyle Laletto, who threw those three touchdowns, and Mike White, who looked impressive at the Senior Bowl, and to see if these guys are worthy of a fifth, sixth, seventh round draft pick for the Bears as a developmental quarterback. So Danny's already started by looking at all the Senior Bowl tape that he's accumulated, plus he's going to look at a number of regular season games, and so when his scouting reports come out, they're going to be really detailed and really great read for all of us diehard football fans. All right, let's move on now and talk about the rushing game, and that's going to fall under the bailiwick of Phil Rainey, West Coast Phil. Tell me what you saw from the rushing game and the players that stood out, and maybe even a player or two that you may perhaps you were disappointed with.
I'm going to start with my West Coast guy, Rashard Penny. I've been watching him for quite some time now since he does come from San Diego State, and, you know, that's kind of in fact, it's in my state since I live in California, too. I've seen a lot of him. He looked pretty good. He looked really good in practice, and he also played well in the game. You know, had 66 yards rushing, and, you know, he averaged a 7 yards carry. So, you know, I was impressed with him. I think he kind of helped his draft stock a bit because, you know, there were some knocks on him that people were talking about, his size and everything. But he's a versatile back because he can catch the ball as well, too, because he had a lot of all-purpose yards in this game. He ended up with 64 yards rushing and 73 receiving, and he also had 15 returning kickoffs. So he finished second in all-purpose yards for the South with 152. So and he, that was double what the guy on the other side of the field did for the North squad. So Rashard Penny, he really impressed me. And, you know, I do have a little bit of bias because he's from the West Coast. But the other guy, Kalen Balazs, he had a pretty good game, too, for the North side. But he's also a West Coast guy, too. So there we go. Might be a theme there. But the other kid, he was a bit of a disappointment. He was actually the best player in practice. Iowa's Akrum Wadley. He didn't do so well in the game. He only had 38 yards rushing in the game. So he was one of those guys who ended up being honored for his week of practice, but he didn't carry that over into the game. But, you know, it's just one game. It's just one game to showcase yourself. And, again, you got to go back and look at the film on these guys to really get a good glimpse of who they are. So I'm looking forward to diving into watching Wiley because I didn't see much of him on film yet other than what I saw him during the week in Mobile. So I'm looking forward to getting to know him a little bit better as a football player other than from just this one game and this one week of being at the Senior Bowl.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Kalen Balazs because he intrigues me tremendously because of his size. He's 6'3", 220 pounds, and I wouldn't mind seeing the Bears select a mid-round draft pick, a guy who can fill in for Jordan Howard and has that same kind of battling ram style in case a guy like Howard gets hurt. Danny, I know that you were intrigued by him and saw him a lot in practice and spoke with Phil about his pad level maybe being too high during practice, but something that maybe he adapted to during the game. Why don't you share that story with our listeners?
Yeah, before the Senior Bowl, before I got down to Mobile, I was going through the running backs group, and I just kind of skimmed through, and I saw a bunch of his tape. And the one thing I pointed to Phil, I said, hey, I think this guy can play receiver because he's tremendous out of the backfield. Has natural hands, good, you know, hands catcher, and just catches the ball effortlessly. And I said, and the way he run his running style is upright. So he was taking a lot of shots going through there, you know, going through the line, a lot of midsection shots, a lot of shots in his, you know, chest. I'm like, this guy has got a lower his pad level. And I said, keep an eye on him. And lo and behold, I don't know if Phil talked to him or not, but lo and behold, in the game, Balazs, you know, lowering his pad level, he's trucking guys. So I'm like, that's what I wanted to see on tape. Yeah, I mean, I didn't see it at the tape that I watched at Arizona State, but I saw it in the game on Saturday. So, you know, another guy, Jalen.
Yeah, me and Balazs went out for breakfast before the game. So
he is a West Coast guy, you know, so I figured he. But
I'm just kidding for those of you who think I'm serious. I didn't have a chance to meet him, so I have to clarify that.
Phil, I was wondering, Jalen Samuels, North Carolina State. I know he was being touted more of an H-back. I thought he had a great week of practice.
Yes.
He disappointed me in the game, so I don't know if that you agree with that assessment or not.
No, I do, and I'm looking at his stats. He had the same amount of yards as Wadley, but he didn't do as well in the game.
He's another one that, right. I guess they might be talking about moving him to H-back or something like that. But, I mean, he really, to me, he shined during the week of practice, but just something didn't click, I guess, through the game, so...
Well, and also, you know, some players, they're good practice players, but, you know, it takes a little something else for them to perform in a game and vice versa. Some guys are horrible practice players, but then when the game is, and, you know, the lights come on, they turn it on a bit. And I think you get a little bit of that at the Senior Bowl, especially when you're playing with guys you're not familiar with, you're practicing with guys you're not familiar with, and it's only 3 days. You know, so you kind of have to take a lot of what we've seen with a grain of salt and don't get too high on a guy and don't get too down on a guy over 3 days of practice in one game.
Right.
So,
yeah, you can't judge a year long of or you know, in some cases 3-4 years, you know, of tape, you know, over 1 week or
right.
1 week period or one you know, one All-Star game. So,
yeah, the value of these All-Star games is really what you see on one-on-one battles, how players respond to coaching, what players say during the interviews, just even watching them walking down the hallway at the hotel. Those are things that scouts are looking to, that interaction in the hotel, getting to know these guys. Sometimes that's even more valuable than what happens during a game, because this is, again, just one game, and it's with players that you've never played with before. You've got 3 days of practice, and so you can't really expect players to perform at their peak level, but there is value for scouts in so many other ways, and so that's why I'm thrilled to be talking to you guys, because you ran into some of these players and have some insight on as to what kind of people they are, and it's not just watching game tape. Now, we're going to
You're right, Aldo. Actually, we sit and we watch everything these guys do, you know, from the way they walk, the way they interact with other people. So, you know, you take a lot of other information in that you can't get from watching film, because that also does come to play in regards to, does this guy fit in our locker room?
Great stuff. Okay. Yeah. Now, let's talk about the wide receivers. And I know that you guys had an interesting story to share about DJ Shark, who had the game of the Senior Bowl. Unquestionably, arguably, you could say, you know, so maybe some other guys had better games. But DJ Shark did catch 5 passes for 160 yards and 1 touchdown. And this is a guy that Danny was really high on during the week and giving the elbow to Phil and saying, Phil, West Coast Phil, are you seeing this guy?
Danny, yeah, he was elbowing me in during the time we were sitting and watching these guys in practice the whole week. Phil, look at Shark. I mean, that's all he would say. And, you know, at first I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't know much about him because I was watching the other two guys that I'd been watching the week prior to coming to Mobile with Michael Gallup and Deshaun Hamilton, and but yeah, Shark did. He got on my radar, and I'm looking forward to watching more film on him. And you know, so Danny was on to something there. He had a really great game. You know, you can't argue that. In fact, Shark, I think Danny, weren't you arguing with me that he should have been the MVP of the game instead of Laletta? So
I mean, he was everything that I saw. You know, during the week, and I had, you know, I went back quick, saw some tape at LSU, and it just seems like LSU receivers are better in the NFL than they are in college, because apparently LSU cannot find a quarterback to throw them the ball. But he's got, you know, he's got the slender build. But what I like about him, and I compared him a little bit to Ted Ginn, he's got that deceptive speed, the smooth speed, I like to call it, where, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to burn by you. The next thing you know, he's gone. And he does a nice job of running, you know, and once he gets past the corner, when he stacks him and he creates separation on top of his route, does a nice job of looking in the deep ball into his hands. And, you know, my question with him was, there were some drops I saw, you know, on crossing routes. And but, you know, during the week of practice, he caught almost everything thrown to him. So he really caught my eye. And then also, so I also told you about Traquan Smith from Central Florida, as well as Jamon Moore from Missouri. So obviously, you know, knowing the Bears have a dire need at receiver, I was down there with an eye towards the receivers, and those three kids really caught my eye, and I kept telling Phil, like, hey, check out Traquan Smith, and check out Jamon Moore, and check out DJ Shark, I think at one point he just stopped ignoring me because I kept talking about the receivers. So.
No, I didn't stop ignoring you, but I was paying more attention to the guy that I think and I really like. And I think a lot of Bears fans are going to agree with me when you if you actually start watching this guy, a tape of him a little more closely like I did. And that's Michael Gallup from Colorado State. He reminds me a lot of a guy on the Bears roster already. He's similar to Kevin White, who's not had a good career with the Bears because of his injuries and stuff. He's a really tough receiver. He's a type one. He catches the ball. He's looking to he's turning into a running back and going into full beast mode with his style of play and the way I've even heard him say this in interviews and read articles where he says, "Yeah, I'm looking to destroy you once I catch the ball." So I really like him a lot, and I think he would be a good replacement for Kevin White if he can't go any longer. And unfortunately, because when he was in college, I liked him too. And I remember on draft day when I was watching the NFL draft and the Bears picked him, I was actually really happy and excited to see him play. But I'm just kind of disappointed that his career hasn't turned out to what I thought it would be because of all of his injuries. So, you know, Gallup is a guy that, Bears fans, you guys should be paying a lot of attention to as well.
So the biggest thing about Gallup, the question I had was can he separate? So, going over his tape, he doesn't create that much separation. So I'm
but he's physical.
But
he's
physical.
Very physical. So, I mean, you can create separation with your physicality, too.
He
has that down pat.
He's a guy who can go up and get the ball. He can make contested catches, meaning
exactly.
That he can catch a ball with a defensive back over his back. And the thing about him that excites me is his yards after the catch. I mean, this guy will break tackles. He'll bowl over defenders. So he's a pretty interesting prospect as well. Actually, the kid who had probably the best week down in Mobile was Deshaun Hamilton from Penn State. But unfortunately, his game wasn't all that great. But there's definitely some talent at receiver. This might be one of the more deeper positions. It might not be top heavy in talent, meaning it might not have a top 10 or top 15 pick, depending how you see Calvin Ridley. But it's got depth where you can get a good receiver second, third, possibly.
Well, and you forgot about James Washington from Oklahoma State too.
He was another guy, yes.
He was actually the practice player of the week during the week. So, but he didn't really have a good game.
Coming into him, I saw him more of a slot receiver. But what he did was talking to some other scouts. Is he showed the ability to separate vertically, which now gives him the opportunity to be used outside by the numbers. So. And his route running at Oklahoma State wasn't the greatest. I mean, a lot of times he would round off his cuts. There wouldn't be sharp cuts. But in Mobile, I mean, he was separating with ease, running nice, clean routes. So it's obvious he has worked on his game since the end of the season, and he's improving. And the fact that he showed some burst, some vertical separation, the ability to separate like that way, I'm thinking, like, this kid could also be now not only a slot receiver, it can also be an option on the outside.
There were a lot of guys on the wide receivers for both the North and South who show some kind of promise. I know, Danny, you talked about Jamon Moore, the kid from Missouri. Mm-hmm. Lauren Cox on our preview Senior Bowl show talked about Byron Pringle, how much he loved him. Now, each of those guys just caught one pass at the Senior Bowl, Moore for one for 22 yards and Pringle one for 9 yards. But those guys showed a lot during practice week that's very intriguing. Along with those guys, I liked Marcel Atman, the kid from Oklahoma State, Alan Lazard. Now, Lauren didn't like him as much as I liked him. Lauren said that he didn't like the way he runs. He kind of looks more of a tight end than a wide receiver. But I thought he just was making play after play during practice. But again, during the game, there's only one football. And so it didn't get around to some of these guys as often. Jaleel Scott was another guy who had a really good practice week. You already mentioned that Sean Hamilton only caught one pass for 5 yards. But all week long, he was playing really, really good football. I got a little sound of some of these guys that I'd like to share with you. First of all, starting with Michael Gallup. He was asked what he needed to improve on, and he offered this really interesting response.
After three practices, it's really just showing me I need to study. That's probably the biggest thing. Just study the game, be a student of the game. I've been out here just, you know, almost, I would say, going through the motions, and it's not been very good for me, but, you know, it's an experience. Everybody has to go through it. So I'm glad I got to come down here and, you know, go through this experience.
Now, it's very interesting that you compared him, Phil, to Kevin White, because that's been one of the knocks that about Kevin White that was whispered about him, is that perhaps he wasn't as tuned into the playbook as maybe some other receivers. It was just a guy that was relying on his talents. Now, obviously, the biggest issue with Kevin White has just been the unlucky injury situation for him. But if Gallup comes into the NFL just relying on his athletic ability, that's only going to get him so far. So let's hope go ahead.
And I've actually heard some information from some other scouts as well. The same thing. He you know, he's not a good practice player, and so he pretty much confirm that with what the clip you just played.
He's not into
putting in the work, which he's going to need to do when he gets to the next level.
Now, I also want to play a little sound from DJ Shark, Danny's favorite player. Again, 5 catches, 160 yards. He had one that was 75 yards, another one that was about 40 yards, and then the other 3 catches were about in that 10-yard area. But this was DJ Shark. I caught him just as players were being forced to leave, and so I was able to ask him a couple of questions. Let's listen in.
DJ, tell me about your week. What did you learn most throughout the practice sessions, meeting with coaches, and in the game?
Just learn to compete. And everything that I had to work on, they was there side by side to help me out, and it really worked out.
Mm-hmm. You had a tremendous game. Tell me, you know, what it means to you to perform at such a high level.
It means a lot. This is a historic game. I learned a lot about the history this week. I didn't know it last so long. I didn't know Walter Payton was here. And just to be able to get this award means everything to me.
So interesting that these guys who love the game of football, but they're not necessarily, some of these guys, I should say, are not necessarily students of the game. Phil, do you think that hurts them when they turn into pro because they've got so much to catch up on, or is that not something that we should be concerned with?
Definitely students of the game as far as it pertains to them watching film and, you know, stuff like that. But as far as students of the game, as far as knowing the history of the game, no, you can't really expect them to. I mean, this game of football is pretty old. And if you get a guy that knows a student of the game from the history standpoint, then you already know you got a football junkie right there. I mean, any kid that at these guys' ages, you know, I'm talking about 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, if they know guys like Walter Payton, who was well before their time, and they're bringing those kind of players up, then you know you got something, and you know this kid is really into football, that he even took the time to know the history of the sport he plays in that regard of the, you know, players coming before him. But definitely you better be a student of the game as far as your film work, and also you're working on your technique in practice and stuff, which, you know, you better have it translate to your game on Sundays, because if you're not, you won't last in the NFL. As they say, the NFL stands for not for long. You won't be in it that long if you're not going to learn to become a student of the game if you're already not one.
Last little piece of audio I'll play for you is from Deshaun Hamilton, the kid from Penn State, who he had a really good week of practice, but dropped passes
I say he had an excellent week of practice.
But I did see him drop a couple of passes, and he mentions that in his soundbite right here.
What's the strength of your game?
Probably route running. Route running would probably be my best strength. And then consistency as well. Hands, believe it or not, is one of my best strengths. Obviously, I've been a little bit shaky in that area, just haven't been in my rhythm, you know, playing with new quarterbacks, things like that. But really, those three things, my hands, route running, and consistency are the things I rely on the most.
Danny, are you surprised that he kind of mentioned that his hands were an issue and kind of blamed that on the fact that he was playing with different quarterbacks?
I mean, I don't like that. You know, I understand that what he's coming from. I understand his point of view in terms of getting used to, you know, a quarterback, the way he throws it, the way he likes to place the ball, where Hamilton likes, you know, usually catching the ball. But I mean, all the receivers, right, are playing with quarterbacks they haven't played with before. So I get what he's saying. I just didn't like him using an excuse.
And Danny, I want to chime in on something you just said. It kind of struck with me, too. You know, you liked him because he had an excellent week of practice, and I kind of was laughing at myself. Like, well, that's all well and good, but he didn't play that well in the game, and I don't think they're paying you to be a good practice player. They're paying you to produce on the field. So, I mean, he may have had an excellent practice, but you know, that's not what he's going to be getting paid for in the NFL. So,
no, I understand, but I'm just saying, like, in the practice, what I do is I look to see the traits. You know, does he have quick feet? Is he in and out of his routes quickly? Is he clean on top of his stem? Stuff like that. I mean, there was a couple of times where he just made a couple of the cornerbacks just look silly in practice, and that's what I look for is the 1-on-1. Not doesn't mean it's he's an end all be all my top rated receiver or anything like that. I'm just saying that he had a really good week of practice in terms of showing the dependable hands, showing the running ability, the ability to separate.
You know, except in the game where it counts.
Right, right. But the thing is, when we look at these, these receivers in terms of Bears, scouting them for the Bears, like going back to Lazard and, Marcel Aitman, if you look back at KC, they have these quick, fleet-foot receivers. And I don't know if the Bears are going to be going for that big-bodied receiver.
Interesting.
A 6'4", 6'3", 6'4", receiver, I go up and get a kind of guy. I think they're going to want, guys who are quick in and out of their routes, who can run those quick slants, break off, off of tight press coverage and beat the corner with quickness, right? So that's what I was going into looking at these receivers during the week. And, kids like Hamilton, kids like, Shark, Traquan Smith, those are guys that caught my eye because of the ability to separate quickly at the line of scrimmage, versus own, press coverage. So that's why I was, these are the guys I kind of pinpointed and they kind of just stuck to me. So I'd be curious to see how the Bears draft. We know they're going to overhaul the position, right? They're going to bring in free agents. They're going to draft kids. So I just want to see how they're going to do, how they're going to recoup the talent at that position, because are they going to go with those big guys that we like seeing? Are they going to, like Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall, are they going to go with the quick, guys that are like a Tyreek Hill they have in KC, and at one point they had Jeremy Maclin in KC, Albert Wilson in KC. So I want to see how they restock that position.
Very good.
And I think they're going to go with some playmakers, and they're going to look for whoever can make plays. So whether they're big, small, whatever, if they can catch and score touchdowns, I think that's who they're going to go after, because I know that's what I would be doing.
Very good. All right. Now, we know that the Bears are not going to overhaul their tight end position, but we definitely were on the lookout for a tight end play at the Senior Bowl. That falls under Danny's bailiwick. Give us a quick report on what you saw from the tight ends, Danny.
All right. Well, the tight end group, the one thing that kind of disappointed me was that the two guys I was coming in most interested in watching beginning of the week were hurt or got hurt. Adam Brenneman from Massachusetts and Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State. So those guys were gone. But a couple of the replacement guys caught my eye. And one of them was Jordan Akins from Central Florida, excuse me, and Deion Yelder from Western Kentucky. The majority of the group, both on the north and south, I think you can call these guys more so of move tight ends, joker tight ends, meaning these are guys that are not going to be lining up next to the tackle to block in line, or we call a wide tight end. They're going to be flexed out in the slot. Some might be an H-back option out of the backfield, so on and so forth. So what I wanted to see was their ability to separate, catch the ball, obviously, and speed and all that stuff. So Akins, to me, the kid from Central Florida, might have the best hands of the group because he just seems like a natural catcher, soft hands, making it look easy, basically, out there in the practice field. He even pulled in a one-handed highlight reel catch for a touchdown in practice on Wednesday. So he's a kid that I'm going to go back and do some more digging on in terms of his tape. But he's more of a stretch flex tight end. Gesicki from Penn State is probably the highest rated tight end. And I think right now he's got like a low second, high third round grade going into the draft process. He's a big kid, 6'5". He's got, huge hands and a large catch radius. So, but again, I got to see in terms of blocking, how does he match up? Is he just going to be a guy they're going to just use in a passing game? The two that actually I think did somewhat or decent in blocking were Durham Smythe from Notre Dame and then Deion Yelder from Western Kentucky. So There's a ton of and Ian Thomas from Indiana also flashed too.
I like that.
I know he had a catch for 22 yards, I believe, in the game.
28. Yeah.
So a mixture, more so the, like I said, the move tight ends that catch the pass catchers than the actual inline blockers. So, but definitely some talented kids out there that we saw this week in Mobile.
Very good. All right. Now talking about overhauling. The Bears' offensive line is certainly going to get some attention in the draft. The question is, how much of attention is going to get attention early in the draft? And so I want to hear from both of you guys. The responsibilities for evaluating offensive linemen is divided. Danny is going to focus on the offensive tackles and the centers, and West Coast Phil is going to do the offensive guards. So why don't we start with Danny and tell us about the tackles, then I'll turn it over to West Coast Phil. He'll talk about the guards, and then we'll go back to Danny to talk about centers. So, Danny, tell me a little bit about what you saw from the offensive tackles at the Senior Bowl, and I gotta just headline this, that in my opinion, I thought the offensive tackles were very impressive during practice week, but during the game, they were very disappointing. Did you see it that way?
Well, I came into the week looking at two guys, right? Because I figured the Bears are going to be needing a young tackle. You know, I know they signed Leno, but there's always a chance that they, you know, could grab a tackle, play him at left guard, maybe, you know, get, you know, cut Josh didn't to recoup some of that salary cap money. But so I'm looking at left tackles, and the two guys I was looking forward to seeing was Brian O'Neill and Tyrell Crosby. O'Neill from Pitt and then Crosby from Oregon. But those are the two guys that probably disappointed me the most. Yeah. O'Neill, who's 6'6", 298 pounds with 34-inch arms, he was to my mind, the more athletic of the two.
Right.
He's a former basketball player. He's got excellent feet. But I just saw him get beat time after time, rep after rep, with speed on the outside. And then also he was easily bullied back into the backfield, which we knew he needed to get stronger. So he was some guy that I was disappointed in. And then Tyrell Crosby, the same thing. I mean, comes from Oregon. He's got the size, he's got the arm length. But he just doesn't seem like he has the foot quickness to play left tackle. Again, I've got to dig into his tape. We're not going to make a judgment on him based on just the 1 week at the Senior Bowl. But it seemed like he just lacked the foot quickness to be able to hold up there on the left side. So, but there are some young guys that caught my eye, and mainly because of their size and athleticism. So the one kid was Joe Noteboom from TCU.
Mm-hmm.
6'5", 306 pounds, 35.5-inch arms. He's got the size, the feet, and the athletic ability to play left tackle in the NFL, in my opinion. The biggest question, though, with him is his core strength. Can he anchor? And I talked to some of the scouts, and they're also questioning, does he have that dog in him? Meaning, has the ability to finish his blocks? Does he have that mean streak in him? And, you know, just going over some of his tape prior to and after the Senior Bowl, I don't see him really finishing his blocks that well. So that's something that you're going to have to work on as well. And then a kid from Maine, Jameel Denby, who I had no idea who he was until I got to Mobile. He, too, caught my eye with his athleticism, his ability to quickly, you know, get out of stance and set up. He demonstrated the ability to maintain a proper position between himself and the speed rushers. So he's a kid that has the ability, has a chance to be drafted late, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh round, possibly, and developed. So that was a kid. And then another kid that had a bad game, but you know, pretty good week, was Tariq Cohen's old teammate, Brendan Parker from North Carolina A&T. Again, 6'7", 303 with 35.38-inch arms. Athletic kid, but he had a couple of holding penalties in the game. So kids that can be developed.
Yeah, he is definitely an intriguing prospect just because of his size, and he did have some good results in college, but he definitely also looks like a developmental project, a guy who really shouldn't be playing in an NFL game for 2 or 3 years. Just put him in the practice squad and watch him develop. Before I turn it over to you, Phil, for your report on the guards, I want to play a little audio tape of guard Will Hernandez, who I think was one of the stars of the offensive line play, not only during the game, but also all week long. And I want to give our fans a taste of who Will Hernandez is. He is some tough hombre. Listen to him talk after the game.
Well, can you tell me what you learned the most this week being here at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, definitely competition. You know, and here, you know, when people are expecting you to compete, you got to come out and produce. You know, nobody here is going to, you know, take it easy with you or say it's okay. You know, here it's all about production. You got to do what you got to do, and you got to do it quick, fast.
What did you learn that here this week that is going to help you in the pro game?
Definitely a lot of technique drills on the offensive line speaking. A lot of drills, a lot of, you know, I learned a lot from all the other offensive linemen. You know, we're really close, and a lot of guys taught me different stuff. I was able to, you know, show some of my technique and learn from them also. But definitely learned a lot.
Phil, are you as high on Will Hernandez as I am?
Yes, because I like everything he just said. He sounds like a guy that gets it. You know, as you heard him say, is you know, it's about producing. You know, he understands that if he doesn't produce, he's not going to be in the NFL. So, you know, everything he said was spot on. And I'm looking forward to seeing him, this guy playing the NFL. You know, he just made me a huge fan of his with just from what he said. And, yeah, he did look pretty good in practice, too. But, Danny, I want to go back to you didn't give my West Coast guy, Alex Kappa, any love. So, yeah, he you see him as a guard, but I see him as a versatile guy because he played tackle in college and he played tackle in the game. And so I'm a little disappointed you just completely ignored my man. He's, you know, he's like a bartender, not a bartender, but he's like a bouncer at the bar. And so you're talking about guys with some dog in them. Yeah. Both him and Hernandez, these guys have some dog in them. So yeah. I think he can play both positions in the NFL.
We'll agree or disagree on that part. But as far as having some dog in him, yeah, definitely. That guy was rag-tossing some guys, you know, left to right in practice. And the only thing about him at tackle is I don't think he's got the foot speed again to you know, maintain his ability to stay with in front
of
the
defender. Well, I agree with you there because, like we were talking about in Mobile, you know, the one thing about the guy I noticed is if he gets his hands on you, you can forget it. He's going to probably throw you to the ground, but he's going to struggle against some guys with some speed. So, but even those guys, if they get a little too close to him, sometimes it's just like in boxing. You know, you're a short guy, but if you try to get up in there and mix it up with a guy with some long arms, and this is kind of similar, you might catch a few unless you can work your way through those punches and get up inside of them. You know, you might catch a few. So I see Alex Kappa as that type of player, even at the tackle position. Don't get too close, because if he gets a hold of you, you're pretty much done.
The one thing about
Hernandez was same thing with Hernandez. I mean, this guy's a mauler. You know, if he gets you, he's going to finish you. Now, you talk about a guy who will finish his blocks. Will Hernandez will finish his blocks. My only thing is, if we're looking at in terms of the Bears, I think they're going to go for more of the athletic, offensive lineman that'll be able to move or run a lot of outside zone stretch plays, some inside zone. I just think, you know, guys like Kappa and Hernandez are probably better suited for a power blocking scheme. So,
right.
That is going to be really interesting to see how, if any way, this offensive line is going to transform itself. I mean, they have focused on trying to obtain athletic offensive linemen, which is why we've seen Bobby Massey at right tackle, which is why Hironas Garasu was drafted at center and so forth. But those guys have not worked out as well as the big mauler types, the Josh Sittons that they acquired in free agency, Kyle Long is, while very, very athletic, is a mauler too, and a guy that can finish his blocks in the way that Hernandez and Kappa do. So it's going to be interesting to see how that develops with this new coaching staff.
Nagy comes from the Andy Reid school, so we know like he likes to run the West Coast offense and mixing some RPOs here, but they're a heavy screen team, so they're going to want their offensive linemen to get out in front and block and get out in space, get to the second and third level of the defense. So guys like Kappa and Hernandez, I don't think have the foot speed to be able to do that in the second level. Now, if you're running that power zone, you know, the power scheme or where you're just going to maul, you know, head up, maul the guy in front of you, yeah, then you have a space for Hernandez and Kappa. I just don't know if this is going to be the direction the Bears are going to be going with in the future, so.
Well, you also got to keep in mind, too, the coaches, they have to base their whatever they do on the personnel they have on that team. So you can't necessarily say because he had these guys type of guys in Kansas City, he doesn't have them in Chicago. So, you know, he might have to – the West Coast offense is one where you can mold it after the type of players you have on the, on your team and not necessarily be a certain way automatically. I mean, because during the – sometimes when the 49ers didn't have good receivers, they ran the ball a lot. And but they had short, quick guys, but they also could, you know, power you too. So –
were there any guards at the Senior Bowl, guys that had that kind of athletic ability?
For me, Wyatt Teller from Virginia Tech, Isaiah Wynn from Georgia, did very well.
He was the one guy I was going to say because he was actually the top guy in practice too, as far as the offensive lineman. And Wynn is known for his athleticism, and he, you know, he's being touted as a prototypical guard in the NFL, and you know, with him being very athletic, he might be one of those guys you're talking about. You know, even though he played tackle his entire life in the college. So, again, you know,
well, you're right
we'll see.
You're right there, West Coast Phil. That he won the week in terms of practice. He was voted the most outstanding offensive lineman at practice after the three practices, and his play during the game didn't let down at all. You're right. He was definitely the most impressive offensive lineman, no doubt about it.
I agree. So,
Danny, we are looking now at the centers from the Senior Bowl, and there is talk that perhaps maybe Cody Whitehair is going to be moved back to guard, and that might leave a hole at the center position. Did you see a center at the Senior Bowl who might be worthy of the Bears' attention?
I hope they leave Whitehair at center because I think he has a potential to be a Pro Bowl center if he stays there at one spot.
Agree.
But in terms of centers at the Senior Bowl, two kids from the North team, Mason Cole from Michigan and Scott Quisenberry from UCLA, to me stood out in terms of guys that I like what they showed. Cole particularly showed well in one-on-one pass rushing drills. He was able to strike quickly with his hands, move his feet well to maintain his position and keep a defender at bay. And then Quisenberry displayed an ability to use his hands to maintain his position and leverage. He was able to shuffle his feet, mirror, and pass pro. So those two guys stood out to me in a positive way. The one guy I was really interested in looking at was Bradley Bozeman from Alabama. He was on the South team. He had a mixed bag, a mixed week for me in terms of early on, he was performing well in both the pass rush and run drills, you know, using his strength and hands well to strike the defender and keep him at bay. But then, however, later on in the week, he was just being beaten easily by the defensive lineman, you know, displaying slow feet as he was struggling to recover when he was off balance. So looks like he might be struggling, you know, someone who might struggle out in space at the defensive second and third level. It's kind of like I was talking about earlier. Bears might want to get their guys out in space, out in front of the running backs or receivers on quick hitting plays. So I think he's going to be a guy with, from what I could tell, that might struggle out in space, blocking, quicker defenders like linebackers and safeties and corners and so on and so forth. So.
Yeah, I talked to Bozeman before the practices started, and he told me that he was interested in showing people just how versatile he is, that he can not only play center but left guard and even tackle if necessary. And maybe that was part of his problem. And, you know, he seems to me like the type of guy who just should focus on being a center, which is what he did well in college, and play that because I don't think he's got the talent to play really anywhere else. He could be a huge disappointment, but maybe he just had a bad week. We will see.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on him.
He started off well. And I think you and I might have been there right there in front of the first practice where, yes, you know, we were in the end zone and he was going one-on-one and he was stoning guys. So, you know, started off impressive. And then, I don't know, but just like I said, you know, we were talking, you know, these kids go through so much during the week, you know, in terms of meetings and learning their teammates, learning the playbook and all. So it's not uncommon to see a kid, you know, struggle as the week goes on, as they probably, you know, get tired out either mentally or physically. And then on the flip side, we've all seen kids also, you know, excel, you know, start off slow and then get accustomed to their surroundings and then, you know, get better through the week. So it just depends on how, you know, how it played out for this particular guy. But I'm saying, like, he was really impressive in the beginning of the week and then just slowly just tailed off towards the end. So.
Well, and he played a lot of football the last 2 years going into championship games.
Yeah, he did.
All right, so now let's turn our attention to the defense. And, Danny, you're going to start us off with talking about the defensive line play at the Senior Bowl.
My favorite position group of the entire week. I mean, at one point I was being accused of having a man crush on Justin Jones from North Carolina State. And that wasn't because he was wearing a medium jersey either. Both him and his teammate, actually, B.J. Hill as well, these guys were just dominating at times during both the pass rush and the run drills in practice. I mean, they both are strong at the point of attack. Both are effective at bull rushing and offensive linemen back into the backfield. And Jones showed solid hip snap as he was able to penetrate gaps quickly and get upfield. So, you know, and both those guys play with a solid base, you know, a good balance, and you seldom saw them on the ground. So those two guys really impressed me on the North team, as did Harrison Phillips, Stanford defensive lineman. He's a solid two-gapping defensive lineman, something that the Bears might be interested in getting. He showed the ability to get after the quarterback as well, although Phillips does it in a way different than Jones and some of the other kids. You know, he's not the quickest guy off the ball, but what he does is he uses his strength coupled with his hands to out-leverage his opponent, and then he gets back into the quarterback space, into the backfield. Nathan Shepard was a guy from Fort Hays State that I had no idea – another kid I had no idea who he was, but all he did was make play after play after play. He's a defensive tackle. He's similar to Jones. He's got good strength at the point of contact, and he's got an ability to quickly hit a gap and penetrate upfield. So – unfortunately for Shepard, he broke his hand during practice and had to miss the game. But he's a kid that I think made a lot of money this week in Mobile. And then a couple of Ohio State kids, Tyquan Lewis from Ohio State, and as well as his teammate Jalen Holmes. The only thing about these two guys is, you know, they show the ability to convert speed to power and able to, you know, bully tackles back into the offensive backfield. But I think both guys might be best suited for a traditional 4-3 defensive end position. Holmes, as a matter of fact, was being flipped from inside to a 3-technique defensive tackle and then back outside to a DN. So not sure if they have a spot on the Bears, you know, team, but I definitely would, if you can fit them, I would take either one of those kids because those are both some talented defensive linemen.
Yep, I talked to both of them after the game, and I got to tell you, both guys were very impressive.
And then on the South team, two kids really just stood out to me. One was Andrew Brown from Virginia. He had a very solid week of practice, had a very good game as well. He possesses terrific length for an interior defensive lineman, quick off the snap with power, and he's able to stack and shed at the point of contact and also flatten down the line to reach the ball carrier. The one thing, though, while he looked unblockable, you know, during much of the practices and the game, he only had 10 and a half sacks for his career at Virginia. So production-wise, it wasn't there for him collegiately, throughout his career. So, and then other guy is Marcus Davenport, the kid from Texas San Antonio. After making a couple big plays in the first practice, it seemed like it took him some time to feel comfortable with the surroundings, you know. And then, but towards the end, like the Thursday practice, I think he had possibly his best practice of the week. He was consistently beating the tackle off the snap. He was getting in, into the backfield, disrupting the quarterback with his length. So, and then obviously in the game, he had a sack and I believe two quarterback hurries as well. So,
yep.
I think he, interesting though with him is I saw his tape. He plays a lot of 4-3 end, you know, traditional hand in the ground defensive end. But when he produced pressure, he was mostly standing up in a two-point stance rushing as an outside linebacker. So he's being projected right now, I know it's early, as a top 10 pick. That'd be a little bit too rich for my blood at this moment, but I mean if that's where I end up going, you know, the Bears right there in the eighth slot, and they're looking for a pass rusher, so that'd be a kid that they might have some interest in as well.
He worries me a little bit in that it's going to take him a year or two to develop. You know, he's reminiscent to me of Leonard Floyd. He's got a little bit more muscle on him than Floyd did coming out.
Right.
But he's just a guy that is a project. He's going to give you some explosive plays as he's learning, but there's just a lot for him to learn about the game of football.
He definitely has the length and the first step quickness, the speed off the edge, kind of similar to Floyd. But I think Floyd's a better overall athlete, and I know Floyd's better in coverage too. So I haven't seen Davenport drop back in coverage much at all. So I don't know if he's that adapt to, you know, because Floyd was playing at one point in college, he was playing middle linebacker and he was covering running backs out of the backfield. So, it's kind of similar, like you're saying, in similar ways. Do you want two skinny guys coming off the edge with that speed, for, you know, coming directly at the quarterback? That might be something that intrigues the Bears.
Yep. All right, Danny, why don't you take us to the linebackers now, since we're sort of talking linebackers.
Keep in mind, you know, Bears play, you know, 3-4 front. They're going to need an outside linebacker, you know, a pass rush generator. So the kids on the North team that really caught my eye in terms of speed and in terms of athleticism and in terms of the ability to get after the quarterback was Kimoko Ture out of Rutgers, 6'4", 252 pounds, with 34-inch arms. Displayed an extraordinary quick first step as a pass rusher. Was able to gain leverage almost immediately at the snap of the ball and beat the offensive lineman to their outside shoulder. So his ability to bend the corner was unmatched down there in Mobile. Didn't see much of him in coverage. So again, another guy who might just be a situational pass rusher at the moment. Still to develop most of his game to be able to play outside linebacker. But the other thing that concerns me about him is when you go back and look at his tape, he didn't produce much in terms of sack numbers. So you would just kind of have to go back and see, you know, what was going on there, why the production doesn't match the natural ability. And in terms of inside linebacker on the North squad, Mike McCray from Michigan caught my eye a couple times. He displayed a natural instincts for the position. He was quickly able to locate the ball, you know, post-snap. Like his run fits, he came up and filled the gap on run plays and was there to secure tackles. And also, he displayed some sideline-to-sideline speed and awareness. Was also very impressive when dropping back into coverage, too. So he's a kid that I think, if in terms of a middle linebacker, inside backer, I should say, he's a kid that caught my eye, Mike McCray.
Yeah, because he had two pass breakups in the game.
On Saturday, yes, he did. One was pretty impressive, too, where he just kind of had, like I said, he has the awareness. He knew where the receiver was, saw read the quarterback's eyes, and just kind of floated back to the area and just got his hands up and deflected the ball. So he's a guy that, like I said, if you look at it in terms of inside linebacker, he's someone that you can keep an eye on. And now going over to the South, outside linebacker, again, this is a West Coast Phil's guy. I'm going to probably butcher his name, but so Phil, jump in, help me here. Chenna
Nwosu. Chenna Nwosu. Yeah.
So I knew it.
Good guy.
Yeah.
Trojan.
SC
Trojan.
That's it. And this is another guy that can come off the edge with speed. He had 1 year of production, really, was last year. He had 75 tackles, 11.5 tackles for loss, 9.5 sacks, and 13 pass breakups. So that shows you that he's got some coverage ability. So he was a kid that I was talking to some other scouts that, you know, he's come, you know, he's got, there's no issues off the field. A guy who, you know, from what all we can gather, loves football. But the only thing is, you know, you're projecting him, you know, to an outside linebacker, and you're kind of taking it off just the 1 year. So maybe West Coast Phil has more info on Nwosu, since you've seen it, probably seen him more than I have.
So I got a ton of tape on him, so if you want me to send it to you, I will.
Send it over. And then the other guys that caught my eye in terms of outside linebacker, Shaquem Griffin from Central Florida. We all know his story. He was born with a birth defect in one of his, you know, in his hands, and it was amputated. So he's out there playing with one hand. So the one thing about him is it doesn't slow him down. It doesn't stop him, right? So he's constantly, you know, full 100% effort on the field. He can rush the passer. He's been dropping back into coverage. They even used him at safety a little bit during the practices because he's only, I think, 229 pounds. So he's going to be an interesting case to follow. You know, I don't think there's ever been a football player drafted or even played in the NFL that's missing a limb. So we'll see how that progresses. And then Marquise Haynes from Mississippi, another kid, 6'2", 233 pounds, productive 4 years at Ole Miss, does a great job of converting speed to power. But with him, I was told there's some off-the-field questions that may or may not, you know, pop up during this process here. So keep an eye on him as well. And in terms of inside linebacker, this guy, I think Phil and I both agree. Darius Leonard from South Carolina State was the star.
You're talking about man crushes. I had one on him when I saw him without the pads on.
I mean, this guy.
Physically, he's a specimen, a physical, right, you know, a physical specimen. If you look at him with all his pads on, the first thing I said when I saw him was like, who is that guy? He has a chiseled body like Superman.
This guy's got sideline to sideline speed, shows an ability to drop back into coverage, can cover either man to man or zone. He's got the loose hips, the foot quickness that you look for. In a rangy, you know, fast, you know, linebacker. Got heard a lot of comparisons to Talvin Smith from the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's got a huge wingspan, I think over 82 inches in terms of length, arm length. But the thing on him again is his size. He's only 229 pounds. So are you projecting him as a weak side outside linebacker in a 4-3 defense? Are you going to project him as a hybrid safety slash linebacker, similar to a Deion Buchanan with the Arizona Cardinals? That's the only question with him. But in terms of playmaking ability, in terms of range, coverage ability, Darius Leonard stood out in both the practices and I believe the games. I think he had over 15 tackles in the game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, 14. 14. He led the South with 14 tackles.
14 tackles. So.
And just I five by himself.
And I caught up with him after the game. This is what he told me.
Can you evaluate your play this week in practice and into the game?
I say I got better each and every day. Pass rushing, and playing against the run, getting off blocks. I just think I got better each and every day. And today I kind of showed it off a little bit out there on the field, just running around trying to make a play.
You told me earlier in the week that what you love to do most is get in front of the quarterback and harass him and so forth. Did you get to do that today?
Not at all. Not even once. So it was kind of different trying to just sit back because you couldn't really blitz any at all. So, I mean, it was kind of different just going against the back and the tight ends all day.
But that was a kind of a blessing in disguise because he proved to the scouts that he can play that coverage game. And if you look at the tape on him, he is good at harassing quarterbacks and loves to blitz. But what we saw of him in terms of playing the defensive backfield and guarding tight ends and running backs was pretty impressive.
You didn't talk about your guy 00, Danny.
That's because he doesn't want to pronounce the name.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that don't mean you can't talk about him. The guy had two sacks.
Well, the thing about with him is he's to me right now at 6'1", he's just a situational pass rusher. So he's a guy that would fit in the outside linebacker position as well, but more of a situational pass rusher. You can't play him on, you know, three downs, because if you run right at him, he there's no resistance in terms of run support.
Who are we talking about here, Danny?
Double O.
What's his name?
You guys, he won't say it.
Pronounce it. I should know it by now. I think it's Okoronkwo. Is it
Okoronkwo?
Okoronkwo. There you go. Double O. It just sounds cooler.
Yeah, it does. We agree on that. And you notice that I didn't attempt to pronounce it.
In terms of showing some dog in him, and he did show that in the practices and even in the game. I mean, even though he's 6'1" and 240 pounds, you know, he will take on big offensive linemen without a problem. So that it's not that I don't like him. I just see him as a situational pass rusher, and you know, not saying that I'd be upset with having him on my team. I just don't know in terms of, you know, is he just limited to just being a situational pass rusher? Can he get better in terms of playing the run? So,
there's a lot of guys in the NFL that are situational players making a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
David Benn changed the long snapping forever in the NFL. That's all he did. So don't knock a guy just because he's good at one thing, because you can make a lot of money doing one thing well, very well. So
don't get me wrong. I do like 00. in terms of his ability to get to the after the quarterback, but I just don't know long term, you know, how he stacks up in terms of as a prospect. But I'm definitely intrigued by him. You know, just because I didn't mention him doesn't mean I don't like him.
Well, I wanted to give you a hard time because you didn't want to say his name, so we had to butcher that out of you.
All right, West Coast Phil.
I butchered a poor guy's name.
Yeah, really. West Coast Phil, give us a report on the defensive backs, cornerbacks, starting with cornerbacks and then to safeties.
Well, before I do that, I also want Danny to admit to the man crush he has, even though he said he was accused of it. I want him to say he has it. I didn't have a problem saying I have a man crush on Darius Leonard. So he's got to say he has a man crush. Yeah,
Justin Jones. Yeah,
just say it. Got a man crush. There you go.
I got a man crush, man. That kid impressed the heck out of me. I mean, he was constantly in the backfield. You know, like whether it's pass rush, whether it's run, you know, run drills, he was beating his offensive lineman either with strength, leverage, or speed. Just hitting that gap and just getting upfield quickly. Unfortunately, I don't know, you know, he's 6'2", almost, you know, 300 some pounds, but I gotta see how he fits within the scheme. But man, I just wanted you to say
you had the man crush.
I love his medium jersey. It was really tight and short.
Well, I'm gonna say I was a little bit disappointed in the corner in the game.
Not as much as their agents.
That's probably more important because they're costing them money. I just don't think that there were any guys that really stood out other than MJ Stewart, who had a pretty good game. He had, you know, two tackles, and he also had two pass breakups. But other than that, the corners on both sides of both teams, they didn't have good days because some of these guys got torched for some big plays. I just think that the game in the week of practice, you know, they were already coming behind the eight ball with some of the receivers they had to go up against, like Hamilton and Gallup and, you know, some of these guys who Berrios from Miami, who, you know, he was killing them in practice, although he didn't really, you know, show it in the game. But in practice, we were down here in Mobile, that he was giving guys the business, too. So the corners, they suffered. But the safeties, they did pretty good. In fact, Trayvon Henderson from Hawaii, he was the leading tackler on see, you had another man crush there going on.
That kid can play.
He led the North with 10 tackles in the game, and he's from a school that doesn't get a whole lot of notoriety as far as on the college football landscape. He came all the way across the Pacific from Hawaii to play in Mobile, and he had a really great game. He had also a tackle for loss, and was really impressed with him in practice, laying wood on guys in practice. And also, if they would have allowed you to hit in practice, he would have probably, you know, would have been very impressive. But, you know, as in practice, they don't let you really, you know, hit guys hard, and, you know, it's more like tag. And then the other guy who was also had a good game, he was the second leader in tackles on the South behind Leonard, was South Alabama's Jeremy Reeves, who, you know, the homegrown kid from who played right there in Mobile. He had a great game too. He ended up having an interception in the game. So those two guys really looked good and were impressive during the whole week down there.
I'm sorry, but one thing about Henderson impressed me, this is my guy Trayvon Henderson, was you know, besides the week, but in the game, like he came down, he comes downhill aggressive, and he's looking to pound somebody, and he came on a blitz, and he just went straight to the quarterback and knocked him down. And then in terms of also open field tech, he's a sure tackler in the open field. So
yeah, he's kind of like what's his name from Seattle, Cam Chancellor.
A little smaller, but yeah, I mean, similar in terms of
plays
a hitter.
Like him.
It's a hitter and ensure, you know, an open field tackler.
Kazir White, the brother of Chicago Bears receiver Kevin White, I thought he played well in practice, kind of disappeared a little bit in the game. Phil, any thoughts on him?
He had two tackles, which, you know, if you get on the stat sheet, that's good. But he didn't really do anything other than knowing he's the brother of Kevin White to impress me, and he didn't stand out much. I mean, a lot of the secondary play was kind of average or below. Other than the guys we just mentioned. So I mean, but we'll see. I actually have to watch more tape on him from his college days. But as far as his week in Mobile, one of the guys, he didn't really stand out much for me.
Very good. All right.
He's got talent. White's got talent. Yeah, he didn't have that a very good week. I agree with you, Phil. I didn't do much to stick out during the game, but he's got some talent there. So he's a kid.
Of course, he wouldn't have been there if he didn't. But I mean, he just didn't. He didn't do anything to make me really notice him, other than the fact that I knew he was the brother of Kevin White. He didn't do anything to make me pay attention to him like the other two guys I mentioned.
Yeah, what's curious is, you know, coming into the week, I was looking forward to seeing Marcus Allen from Penn State and Armani Watts from Texas A&M, and they didn't do much, really.
Yeah, and they didn't have good weeks in practice either. I saw those guys reading the back of the other guys' jerseys a lot of time.
Very good, fellas. This is fun stuff. And I got to tell you, listeners out there, that hanging out with these two guys this past week in Mobile, Alabama was fun, too. These guys, you just got a small taste of their senses of humor and just how much fun there are to be around. They're going to be frequent guests on Bears on Tap, providing insight on players that they're scouting. And so you're going to get to know them better, get to know their senses of humor, get to know the camaraderie that they've built over the years. Again, both of them studied under Greg Gabriel, so they know their stuff. I'm looking forward to listening to them debate on certain players and talk about their man crushes and so forth.
And remember, Aldo, what happens in Mobile stays in Mobile. So
trust me, I have not told anybody about what you did down there.
I didn't do anything. I scouted players. That's what I did.
Yeah, right. As long as you don't tell anybody about the massages I got, then we're okay.
Well, you just told them, so we didn't have to.
I don't know what you guys talk about. I was just developing men crushes. That's all I was doing.
In fact, I already know you're probably going to cut this stuff out, aren't you?
I might have to if it continues. But it really is a blast hanging out with you guys last week and doing this show with you guys. It's going to be fun. And then just to let our listeners know, on Bears 100 Proof, a new episode comes on Wednesday. Shane Marisol and Draft Dr. Philip Toshin, they'll be sharing their thoughts about the Senior Bowl, and they'll be giving scouting reports throughout the year, too. Those guys love to look at the tape, love to discuss players and so forth. And we'll probably have a show with all four guys and myself moderating discussions. That should be a hell of a fight. We should probably get real life.
No, it won't be any of this East Coast, West Coast battle stuff.
It won't get that dangerous, that's for sure.
Well, although I heard he's going to be the one singing. I'm not singing, so.
You want to talk?
I'm singing the East Coast Phil.
I heard that you sing solo, Phil.
No, yeah, solo, nobody can hear me.
That's funny.
I sing in the car in the shower, and that's it. And both times I'm alone. So.
Hey, we appreciate that very much. And probably nobody more so than Shane Marsaw, who has listened to Phil's songs for the last several weeks and is beyond sick of listening to Christmas songs and everything else that Phil throws a tune for. But listen, again, you guys are a blast. I want to give you each of you a final word just so that, again, our listeners can place the voice with the name. Let me begin with Danny Shimon. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit, get just a closing word or two.
Yeah, just again, just real excited to get this process started. You know, the off season's here. You know, next thing you know, we'll be heading over to training camp. So, you know, before we get to that, we got to go through free agency. We got to go through the draft. And this is a really important process here, as, you know, it seems like, you know, Ryan Pace and the Bears are building that structure within the draft and are going to fill in from, you know, from here and there in terms of free agency. So, you know, getting these draft picks right and building that solid core, solid base is going to be very important. And we're going to be here breaking down tape. We're going to be here, you know, giving you scouting reports, and then more importantly, we're going to be giving you a perspective of this, how this player would fit the Bears team scheme, so on and so forth, if drafted. So on draft night, if you hear a name, you can hop over to Bears Bar Room, pull up the profile, and say, how are the Bears going to use this kid? And you'll be able to read right there as far as how we think, you know, the Bears are going to be able to use a particular player and his talents.
And that is Danny Shimon. You can find him on Twitter at DSHIMON56 at D Shimon. And Phil Rainey. You can find him at R-A-I-N-E-Y underscore P-H-I-L. West Coast Phil, a closing word or two from you, please.
I might have to change my Twitter handle now because I like West Coast Phil a lot. So
yeah, that works for me too.
WCP. You know,
I'll leave it for now. If those who want to look me up, but it might be coming down pretty soon after, you know, Danny's kind of embedded in my head about West Coast Phil.
Listen, I gave you WCP. I gave Double O his nickname. I mean,
yeah, you're the king of nicknames and labeling people.
What are you calling me behind my back? That's what I want to know.
That'll be left for off day.
Yeah, thank you.
He's had nothing but good things to say about you, Aldo.
All right. Which is why
I'm very pleased to be coming on board and working with you guys, and also providing some content to all the Bears fans out there. I've been to Chicago quite a few times. I love coming to Chicago as long as there's no snow and it's not cold. The last time I was there was in 2015, and I'm looking forward to possibly coming back out there again this season for Bears training camp. And if I am out there in Chicago, you know, all you guys are listening out there, if you happen to run into me, please say hi. You know, I love going places and meeting new people, and hopefully I'll get to meet some of you guys that are listening right now, and we can talk football in person. But in the meantime, I look forward to sharing what I know about football with you guys through the scouting reports and on these podcasts. So, I'm looking to have fun. And as you can see, I like to, you know, joke around a bit, but I'm also serious about what I do too.
Absolutely. And we are so happy to have you and Danny at Bears Barroom. I am really indebted to you guys. Thank you very much for sharing so much of your time, not only down in Mobile, Alabama, and teaching me about football, but also on this show. Oh, we're clocking in at about an hour and a half, so this is good free entertainment for our listeners. And remember, you Bears fans, if you drink, please do not drive, and always bear down.